Yes, when I came back here, we had to keep our nose to the grindstone pretty well because to make it successful, which we did. And then I first was elected to the school board, which I served for nine years, and I've seen a lot of changes since then as far as education. And after my 9 years there, I was elected to the Board of Selectmen, to where I served another 18 years. And since then, I've been a trustee of the cemetery funds up until the present time. But during those early years, I also naturally was a member of Farm Bureau, and spent several years as vice president of the Mont Farm Bureau. And I guess because of not only my local philosophy, my general philosophy as far as I'm concerned, helped me become a state representative to the House of Representatives in 1965. And was fortunate, I guess I would say, in introducing a number of very important pieces of legislation which gained pretty good real support and were enacted. And my work with the farmers and so forth. My fourth term in legislature, Governor Davis asked me to serve as Commissioner of Agriculture, which I did for 4 years. And then we were maintaining the farm. It hadn't been for my family, to which I extend an awful lot of credit to my wife and all the children who helped out in every way in carrying on the farm. After 2 years more, I went back in and served 2 more years as Commissioner of Agriculture too. And all this adds up to I served I don't know how many years on the State Agricultural and Conservation Stabilization Committee. In my last 2 years, I was State Director of Farmers Home Administration for the state of Vermont, New Hampshire, and the Virgin Islands. So it's been a tremendous, tremendous education, the life that I've enjoyed. And in order to do that again, I'd say that it's one of those instances of what can be done if you really have a family and you work together. Because if it hadn't been for my family and what they did so that I could do what I did, and I like to feel that I not only did it for them, but I also like to feel that I did it for not only my community but our society in general.
One of the things I always felt is that coming out of the farming tradition, you brought so much to the legislature. Do you want to talk a little bit about, some of the bills that came out of your background?
Yes, one of the ones that the legislation that I proposed was just too early, but over the years it's materialized, and that is, I think it was my first session in legislature that I proposed a bill to tax land according to use, and I was successful in getting it through the House very well. But it was something new, a new approach, and it died there. But others have picked it up since then, and it's become a reality today. So I really enjoyed that, and the success of it. One of the ones I was successful in is getting personal property tax on agricultural, on animals and agricultural land, not agricultural land, but personal property like cattle, pigs, sheep, and so on. That became a law. Being a hunter and a fisherman and so forth, I introduced a bill that so that we were bothered about cars parking in driveways and so on and so forth. That was passed so that there's a fine now that on the laws that says that anybody who parks in the driveway, they can be fined X number of dollars and so forth. Well, I don't know a number of them that.
I think that's the strength, though, of a legislature.
Oh, yeah. I served in the last. In the last big legislature, where every town, and I was chairman of the committee to defend the Vermont Constitution during that time, and I fought real strong, hard, to maintain the big legislature, because no matter what they said about some of the older ones smoking and didn't vote, I didn't get in there only to vote and so forth. There was the common sense that prevailed then. They may not have listened to every piece of legislation and every debate and so forth, but there's certainly value in representation from those small municipalities, and it was, yeah, I lost out, or I lost out, we lost out, I was reducing it. And but I always felt glad that I had the, and I did take the stand that we did, because I think it's something that was, it's changed immensely. A lot of the things that they said it would be less expensive, there would be better legislators, and such things as that, which I entirely disagree with, and we know it's tremendously expensive compared to what it used to be. And I don't think that we have any better legislation coming out than we did back at those times. Yeah. And one thing that I was real proud of, in my first year I was elected to trustee of the University of Vermont, first freshman legislature, and I don't know when. So that was good.
You've had quite a career.
Yeah.
If you could stand it, I'd like you to say again, just because we'll be coming back to this over and over throughout putting the program together, what you told me before, that you didn't believe that there'd ever be a generation that will witness the changes that you've seen, just about in...
Yeah. Yes, as I think back over the years, and especially now as I look back over and I see the changes, all the changes of place, and like we spoke about the electricity, we spoke about the means of...
Maybe we could hold up one sec. There's some little clock that's beeping again.
Oh, yes.
It beeped an hour ago. Playing a little tune for us.
We're almost done. This will be your swan song.
Let's see.
Done?
Yeah, it's done.
Okay.
It's done now.
So if you start again, please. Thanks.
As I, look back over the years and see all the changes from what we talked about, electricity, the means of travel, the methods of education, all the scientific knowledge that's taken place, technology too, our trip to the moon, the means of agriculture, farming, government, how it operates, and all the changes that have taken place, it's a tremendous experience. And whether or not the changes to take place in the future will ever equal what I've seen, I doubt.
One thing I didn't ask you was one of the things I think that leads to all this is the lateness that electricity came through here. And Maybe you should just, you know, give the year or.
Yeah, I recall we were speaking, spoken about electricity several times during the last few minutes here. And I recall electricity first coming into Warren. I guess it was in Waitsville. But my grandfather on my mother's side lived in Warren, and we used to go there as kids. And I recall the first thing they had, the chain, the cord, I guess you'd call it, coming down in the middle of the room. And on the end of that was a fixture and a bulb with a little end on it to where it was the first, and you turned that on, and I thought what a wonderful thing that was. And at the same time, when that electricity came in, they used to have a box that was elevated on some poles as the entrance into Warren, and every night they had an individual who went up there and switched the lights on that put on the street lights. And in the morning he shut it off. And how many years that went on, I'm not sure. But if you think about that as where we were talking about just having lanterns and lamps and so forth, and electricity that came on, and all the things that we've got today, clocks, refrigerators, freezers. I often said in our operation at the farm, we couldn't do a thing in the morning without the electricity. Everything, every motor went on, the cooling, the milking, our grating potatoes, and all that was done by electricity. So what's happened in the use of electricity is just unbelievable.
What year did it come in here?
Through here, I'm not sure what year it was. That was later than it came up the valley. But through here, it was after my wife's folks came here that they each had to pay so much for so many years in order for them to put it through. But if you look back at it, it's not all that long time ago. In another sense, it's a long time.
Quite make it.
Oh, maybe a minute.
We should talk about that because you had a great ball team.
Oh, yes, we did. We even played ball at our little school down there where the girls played with us and everything. And then we went on to have a Warren 4-H ball team versus Waitsfield 4-H ball team. And I'm telling you, that was a lot of excitement, and the parents participated, and there was all sorts of cheering and so forth. Well, after we went to high school, and a bunch of us, and even with a school with only about 70 students, the year that we had our best team, we beat Montpelier, we beat some of the bigger teams around. So we were really proud of it, and a number of us stuck together, and we had a local semi-pro team. And I played with those for a number of years back at those times. And we went on, and we were defeated in the state championship 1-0. But after I got through school and so forth, I didn't play many games, but we certainly had a lot of fun over there. Bob Gove and Elwin Neal and played for a long, long time. But the semi-pro team, there was just a number of us that maybe were a little higher caliber and had a little bit better team. We had a number of people that came, some from Rutland, some from Barry, and so forth. So it was the Valley team, the Valley Cubs. Yeah, a lot of reasons.
Did you want to get that thing about the electricity again, or was that okay?
I'm not sure quite where we were when it came in.
I think we've actually.
It was okay. I think it was just at the very end of the last sentence. I think I can get out before that. I think I'll be okay.
Okay, well, you done good. I hope you're not drained and exhausted.
No.
Is there anything feel sort of, you'd like?
No, I
you feel like?
Let's see, what do I... For seeing what I did, I'm not one who likes to brag.
I know you don't.
And it bothers me somewhat seeing some of the things I did, but it's been, as I look back over it, I guess it's, I sort of feel that I should let people know, or I should let not only just keep it myself, what an experience has been, my life has been. I know others have had probably more exciting and more rewarding and all that, but I just, it's, and how it's been made possible. No, but I don't, this is the thing that'll, what did I, should I have said that? I know it'll go through my mind after you're gone.
Well, just remember, in putting this together, we're looking to put everybody's best foot forward, and we're not, you know, looking to put words into anybody's mouth, and we're looking to put together a radio show that you'll be
mm-hmm.
proud you were part of. We're not looking for, you know,
mm-hmm.
to make people look small or big or just as they see it. And I think that's our obligation in but when you ask somebody to participate and in presenting the
mm-hmm.
you know, the valley.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we should characterize Warren, Waitsfield, Moortown, and Thaiston as places? The differences?
There's been differences, but I think I would say that I've always looked at them as a community. Like I spoke about the 4-H club team from Warren and the 4-H club from Waitsfield, the same way in Boy Scouts, as I remember. What that's part of living. I mean, sure, the one neighborhood versus another neighborhood. When I formed the Rotary, I started Rotary here. We took in the four towns because I think they have so many things in common. And it's different than it used to be. I mean, one community means a communication are the big thing. Yeah. Like each town has their obligations to carry on their government and so forth. But and other ways that they are pretty much, one problem is just as much for one as it is for another. So they have their individual interests and so on and so forth. But you'd see that working with a select man working on the school board. We tried for years. It was a stretch of road that reads from 100 into Faiston. We tried for a long time to get Faiston to plow that road so that we wouldn't have to do half of it and they'd do half of it and we'd swap somewhere else. But we never succeeded.
Well, one of the things I've often thought is Moortown was different because in a sense it was a company town kind of thing, and Warren was much more rural, so to speak, than and sort of looked toward Waitsfield as the center town
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the one that you, Warren, when I was a youngster, Warren, the traffic all went over Roxbury Mountain, not all. But a major portion of it, the mail came over that way. They went over that way for to get their grain ground. They came on the train over there, and they came over here. The runners, they used to call them runners, salesmen, so forth. They came over that. Waitsfield came the other way. I don't know where fishing did come from. Same thing, I guess. But Facedon, I remember when they were so financially strapped that they had to borrow money from a citizen of the town to pay the teachers. And now where are they? One of the richest towns in the state of Vermont. Now that is that's the truth.
Could you say that line again? You bumped into the microphone there.
Yes,
they're
I did.
One of the richest.
Oh, I didn't know you were. Facedon, when I was probably 14 years old or so, about that time, they were so strapped for funds to operate the town that they couldn't even pay the teachers. And they borrowed money from one of the citizens, or one of the citizens volunteered to loan them the money to pay the teachers. Now today, in every sense of the word, if you look at the values, they're one of the richest towns in the state of Vermont.
And that's because of the ski industry
alone. Nothing else was a factor there.
Now, the other day, you were talking about the ski industry and, the fact that it wasn't really a sure kind of...
Oh, yeah.
And you had a couple of other ideas. I wonder if you just...
Yes. The ski industry, and here again, this is where I was involved in legislature, and I had some good sources of information who provided me. The ski industries in general are not overproductive as far as being financially sound. We have so many of them that are in operation that there aren't all that many who are a financial success. And that makes it a very unstable economic base. Now, when everybody had a farm, you were pretty sure, and you had something that you could come back on, and you had a stable economy. We saw this develop. It's a very unstable one. Weather conditions and other conditions can have a great effect upon it. And that's why, from my point of view, that we ought to try and get some industry, some business in here that gives us more stability as far as the area that we have.
You mentioned an idea the other day.
Yes.
And what I'm trying to do, I don't know whether we'll use it or not, but if I do interview the woman, it's a nice lead into. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. This is why at first I didn't get involved, because I know, having been in office and so forth, in town office, I like to rely upon the knowledge and ability of the town officials, but luckily a aquifer that provides something in excess of 1,000 gallons of water a minute has been discovered here in town, and they've been in the process for about 4 years trying to work out something so that they can get the permits to start up the operation. And it's bogged down. And so I said, well, it's unfortunate that such a circumstance has arisen. And I think that we ought to do whatever we possibly can to get this online so that it gets in operation and we'll have somewhere, there's been saying 50 or 60 new jobs. And I've been trying somewhat in a sort of a playing a role in trying to get the officials together with the individual so that this could become a reality.
Just to crystallize it a little bit, how would 50 or 60 jobs, just describe how they would relate to the aquafarm?
Well, you have 50 or 60 jobs, and what I understand it, what it requires for an operation like that are well-paying jobs, and the establishment of the business itself, tax base is one of the big things that would be, that would bring dollars and dollars into the town, and the employment of X number, 50 or 60 or 40, whatever it is, maybe more, just automatically means that much business for the service stations, the grocery stores, the restaurants, the people coming here from elsewhere, to tourists too. That's an unusual aquifer. So it just adds to the base, economic base of the whole area.
Explain what you mean by an aquifer, and would this be kind of a water plant, or?
I guess I don't understand what it is. I got the water part, but I don't know. What are you going to do with it? I missed that. I didn't hear about this idea. So.
Okay. I've been concerned about water, drinking water, potable water. And I think people all over should be concerned, because there's such a demand on it at the present time to be pure water, and we're doing all sorts of means to purify water. Well, this aquifer is nothing but a well or a supply of water that would hit by drilling and just pours right out of it at in excess of 1,000 gallons a minute, if you can imagine how much that is. And what that would develop into is a bottling plant for pure water. It also probably would develop into a flavored water, and land knows what they would produce out of this supply of water. There's a number of water systems, but I believe they said this was the largest aquifer east of the Mississippi River. Did you notice Vermont Pure? Maybe you haven't noticed, because I've been thinking about it. Vermont Pure, as a big advertisement in the paper, said that they were going to be supplying the water for the Boston Marathon this next year, and for something in New York too. So you see, that's maybe it's an industry in its infancy, and yet it's pretty well started. And I just feel they should take advantage of an opportunity that most people don't have, or most communities don't have.
I think it's something we definitely should explore in the interview. Listen, you've been terrific, and I'm sorry we put you through so much, but we got just what we wanted.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
And we'll weave it together. I meant to, again, I'll leave you the country.
Okay, this is Ed Irish Room Tone. Okay, that's the end of the room, Tom.
And breathe it.
Great.
Yeah,